Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation from Maine to Minnesota, and I guess to Moraga. It is the Savage Nation, heard on hundreds and hundreds of stations, much to the disquiet, distemper, and absolute disgust of the psycho-liberals from you-know-where. They don't even want me to be on the radio. See, they don't want an opposing opinion. They want to live in their own world of insanity, because liberalism, as you well know, in the extreme form, is a mental disorder. Liberalism is a mental disorder. How else do you define people who elect this shill called Obama to the presidency, who runs on a campaign of change and now appoints 17 lobbyists since he's been president? They wanted change and they have 17 lobbyists? Here's a man who said that he would change the way Washington works. And the facts are the facts. Obama has appointed more than 17 lobbyists after talking out of one side of his mouth on anti-lobbyist governance and rooting corruption out of the American government. I don't have to tell you about the pork barrel bill called the stimulus plan. They're even including millions of dollars to kill cattle in order to drive up dairy prices to help dairy farmers, to show you. Now, if that increases jobs for someone, I don't know who, cattle slaughterers or something. But the bigger issue is not these petty thievery issues of the lobbyists, the tax dodgers that Obama is appointing, because we know that Obama, if he keeps this up, will be a one-term president. He'll be remembered as the Chamberlain of our country. That's if he keeps this up, if he doesn't understand that there's only so much malarkey you can throw around until the people catch on. He is trying to Chicagoize the United States of America. He's taken Chicago to a national level. All of the backroom dealing, the lobbying, the payoffs, the favoritism, the lobbyists that Chicago was known for is now being played out on a national level, and there's a good reason for it. It's where he comes from. It's how he learned the game. The difference here is, though, that you, the idiot out there, doesn't know what's going on in front of your eyes because you're such a schmuck that you focus instead on Super Bowl. Go ahead, watch the Super Bowl. Enjoy yourself. Yay, Super Bowl. Super Bowl. Here's a man who says he's going to talk with Iran, Syria, Venezuela, all the dictators of the world who hate us and would like to turn this into a communist dictatorship, he is talking to. Now, if it would lead to world peace, I'd be all for it. But I know something about bullies. I've had to face them all of my life. Now, it's not liberal conservative. There are bullies. I don't know what their politics are. There's only one thing a bully understands, which is a punch in the nose or a swift kick in the middle of his legs. Iran's Hitler, Ahmadinejad, is a Hitler. He says the Holocaust didn't exist. I'd like to take that slimy, disgusting throwback on a tour of the death camps through the photographs and the films that were done during that time. You know what bothers me is we hear the Zionists control the press. I only wish it were true. I only wish Rupert Murdoch were a Zionist. I only wish that the people who own the newspapers were Zionists. Because every time that little maniac, Ahmadinejad, says there was no Holocaust, he should show the Holocaust footage of the villages of Jews being shot, men, women, and children, by the Wehrmacht, by the German army, not just by the SS. The mass dead, the graves of the dead Jews, amongst the others who were killed, the 6 million dead Jews killed in the Holocaust. And this son of a gun has the nerve to say it didn't exist, and the so-called Zionist press doesn't show pictures the next day. And this, by the way, is who Obama wants to talk to. He said he was going to talk with Iran, right? said he's going to talk to Iran. And what did he get back in return from Ahmadinejad? I'll read it to you so you don't say I'm making it up. Iran has said Obama's negotiations are a sign that America is now passive and weak. That's what he got in return. Exactly what I predicted he would get in return, because I've studied history. Apparently, Obama has only studied Chicago politics and the liberal playbook. The platitudes of the liberal playbook. The platitudes of the liberal playbook. Play nice with the bad guy, and he'll become a nice guy. No, Obama. Play nice with the bad guy, and he'll eat you for breakfast. I got a letter forwarded to me from a radio station down in Los Angeles, KGIL, my affiliate, which I appreciate very much. And the woman is outraged that I'm on the air because she's a good liberal and she only wants a one-party system, apparently. Apparently, she doesn't like anybody who criticizes Barney Frank. So she wrote a letter to the owner of the station trying to get me kicked off. And I'll read it to you only because it's typical of what people pass themselves off as liberal, what people who are liberals pass themselves off as today. They're little mini dictators. She said, last week while in my car and scanning radio stations, I heard some of the most degrading comments I've ever heard on the radio, including horrible name-calling of our incoming president and disgraceful remarks about members of Congress, some of who happen to be our friends, such as Barney Frank. Now, first of all, I didn't call Obama a name other than call him by his own name, which is Barack Hussein Obama, so I don't know what she means by calling him names. Calling him a socialist? That's not name-calling, lady. That's kind of saying a butterfly is a butterfly, a gazelle is a gazelle. And then she goes on to say, I read in the L.A. Times that you're turning your station over to right-wing commentators, including Michael Savage. She says, I now see that you also hired others. I can't believe that KGIL, which once had classical music, could hire and promote such vicious and terrible commentators. Now, note so far, she hasn't stated one fact where she finds we are wrong. She just doesn't like our commentary. She says, we're in a new year with a new president who has consistently stated that he wanted to bring people together. Are these people your idea of bringing people together? I hope that you have a healthy New Year. It's written by a Corky Hale. Corky Hale. We don't know who Corky Hale is, but apparently she's a big liberal, a big giver to Barbara Boxer, Biden, Obama, Rangel, Franken, Mikulski, Tom Allen. In other words, you name the far-left liberal cause, and we found out she gives money to it. Now, she's entitled to do that by the American political process. But I'm also allowed to have my opinions by the same process called freedom of speech. But apparently Corky Hale from Los Angeles doesn't like freedom of speech. And so she wants me thrown off the air. Shame on you, Corky. You're no longer a liberal. You know what you become, Corky? A Stalinist. But you're not the issue, Corky. The issue is the tens of millions of Stalinists like you who ride around thinking you have halos over your head, when in fact you really just have the red star of communism over your head, as far as I'm concerned. Shame on you. You know, I see the whole world through many different ways, in many different ways, excuse me. And I could tell you that today I saw the world through a chicken leg. I know you're going to say, what's he going to say now? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to say now. I can even describe the world as it is today through a chicken leg. Let me explain. I wanted to make chicken soup today. I haven't made it in 10 years. I once tried it 10 years ago. Then I made it about 3 months ago. But I realized there was something missing from the chicken soup. I tried to think back to what my mother made. And I said, by God, what's missing are the chicken's legs. I wanted the chicken legs in the soup. And the reason I wanted the chicken legs in the soup is very, very interesting to me anyway. And that is because I was looking for natural sources of hyaluronic acid. You don't know what hyaluronic acid is, but I'll tell you what it is. Hyaluronic acid has been found to reduce inflammation, lessen arthritis, and strangely enough, hyaluronic acid, or HA, is a component of our vitreous fluid in our eye. And strangely this year, I had an eye problem that was found in the emergency room to be resultant from some change in my vitreous humor. I've had minor arthritis come on in the last 3 months, which I've never had before. I've never suffered any of this before. And suddenly I was reading about hyaluronic acid, and I said, wait a minute, two symptoms, both of which might be related to HA, why don't I try to get some naturally? So I do my research, having a PhD in human nutrition, having written so many books in the field of nutrition as a pioneer in the field since the 1970s. I said, my God, look at this. chicken skin, chicken legs contain high amounts of this component, hyaluronic acid. So I said to my housekeeper, could you please go get me a chicken with the legs? Tell the butcher you want the legs. I get a call back. No legs in the chicken. Can't find it in any market. What? I called a butcher. I said, where are the chicken legs? He said, we don't get the legs. I said, well, who gets the legs? He said, they're sold before we get the chicken, even if you buy a whole chicken. They're sold to people who make chicken soup. I said, of course. They're sold for chicken soup. That's what I'm trying to make. But then I thought, and I said, the greed in America is so great. The corruption is so great that you can't even buy a chicken with chicken legs and gizzards anymore because the crooks at the top of the food chain want to suck out the chicken legs and the gizzards and sell them to someone else. It's like the old adage about the man who raised pigs and sold pigs. We sell everything but the squeal. But you can't even get chicken legs unless you're Chinese and you go to Chinatown. You see, because the Chinese are smarter than you are. Americans are kind of naive when it comes to food. They don't even know food. They don't understand food. They think food is multiple courses in a rotten restaurant that charges $99 for rotten food paired with bad wine. But the Chinese are much smarter. When they buy a chicken, it better be clucking. And when that chicken is killed, they better get all the parts that came with that clucking chicken, including the feet, just as my Aunt Bee did. Because the idea of buying a chicken without feet is the same thing as buying a president without legs. I'll be right back. Savage. See, I can talk about Obama's latest corrupt appointment. I can talk about Daschle's tax problems, and I will maybe. I can talk about the other political issues of the day, but I chose to talk about the world through chicken feet because in my day, when you bought a whole chicken, you got the whole chicken with the feet and the gizzards. Now the crooks take the feet and the gizzards and sell it off on the side and let you think you're buying a chicken when you're only buying a portion of the chicken. You're not getting a whole chicken. They have to steal that from you, too. But as I said, if you buy it from a Chinese butcher store, nobody would buy a chicken unless they got the feet as well. I wanted the feet to make a soup. And just as I want a president to have clothing, all I got was something else thus far. I got a media-created president, as far as I'm concerned. Sacramento, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Love your show. Hey, listen, you were saying the chicken leg has those certain nutrients in it. Do you mean the feet or the leg itself has
the feet,
nutrients?
The chicken feet, the feet with the toes.
Oh, okay. Because I'm always concerned.
When I was a little boy, I loved to eat the chicken feet. They were boiled and they were delicious. I didn't know they were also good for me. I didn't know they were rich in hyaluronic acid.
Well, fantastic. I'm going to start having to add that to the restaurant.
Yeah, but where are you going to get chicken feet unless you're a farmer? Are you a farmer?
No, but right here in my little town, we've got a nice little butcher, and he's got everything we need.
Wait. You're in Sacramento, and you can go into a butcher shop and buy a chicken with the feet?
I can go into a butcher shop in Auburn, California, and buy a chicken with the feet.
You mean because they slaughter them there?
No, it's a fresh...
a fresh poultry house. Well, that's different. Down here in the Bay Area, you can't find feet with your chicken unless you go to a Chinese butcher shop.
Hey, I've got a new term for you to use. I want you to coin this phrase, CPLs. It'll just abbreviate your
What is it? I already need. Caught. Now, someone asked me why the feet. What's in the feet, in other words, is not found in the other part of the chicken. And then I'll go on to the rest of the news stories here about Daschle. Daschle was always a crook. Daschle was crooked. That's why he got thrown out of the Senate. You don't remember? You forgot already why he was dumped in 04? He was a crook. It was a scandal of his wife being a lobbyist for the... She was on the FAA and lobbied for the airlines. So that cost him the election already. Now we're supposed to forget. I have a good memory. He's a crooked bum. Another one in the Obama administration. Go see if this would go on if Republican had won, and one after another was a lobbyist or a crook with a tax problem. Tell me how long these vermin in the media would let him get away with it. These empty suits. These wolf blitzer. These dummies. These department store dummies. I feel like strangling the television when I see them come on. These lying communists. That's why I don't want to talk about them. I'd rather talk about chicken feet than chickens in suits. I just want to finish this thing on chicken feet for a minute. The reason that this nutrient, hyaluronic acid, is found in the feet is because the feet are largely composed of cartilage tissue. The same element, believe it or not, is found in the cock's comb, the rooster's comb. And that's cartilage tissue, so far as I know it, which is rich in hyaluronic acid. And as a matter of fact, some remedies are made from the cock's comb, believe it or not. So you see, all the parts you throw out of an animal are the parts that traditional cultures have always eaten. My mother used to make foods that were so disgusting. Like stuffed intestine. The Italians have that. Every culture on earth uses most of the parts of an animal, whether it be the cow or the chicken. We in America, though, have a desire for sanitized foods. We want homogenized, pasteurized foods. The idea of eating organs from animals disgusts us, but many beneficial nutrients are found in the organs of animals. Now, I could make, a rather crude analogy of our politicians being empty suits, but what, I have to tell you what you already know? I have to tell you that most of them are just empty? They may as well be a dummy, a talking dummy, reading sound bites to you. They don't have any heart and soul. In other words, they have no guts. There's nothing in there. There's no real human being. For example, there's a great article that came out from Spengler in Asia Times, which I linked up on michaelsavage.com. Spengler, as you well know, is an anonymous writer. Nobody knows who he is. There are speculations of who he is. I believe he's the most brilliant writer in the commentary world today. And he asks, who are the extraordinary Muslims? And he's quoting Barack Obama, who says, my job is to communicate to the American people that the Muslim world is filled with extraordinary people who simply want to live their lives and see their children live better lives. Now, Spengler says, who are the extraordinary Muslims? He said, really? What are their names? He said, word is that no extraordinary Muslim thinker has been around since the 12th century. Not one. Not one. Not one. So again, we're getting the brainwashing. Some of them may be nice people who want to lead the same lives as everyone else, but where are the extraordinary Muslim thinkers? There are a billion, how many Muslims alive today? A billion? Where's the extraordinary thinker? Where's one Nobel Prize?
Savage.
World of politics through chicken feet is what I'm talking about today. This could become my new classic show, equal to the meatball show of about 10 years ago. But honestly, I wanted to make an honest chicken soup because I wanted to get the hyaluronic acid in the chicken feet, the cartilage tissue. And I was shocked to find that they sell the chicken feet to the soup manufacturer. You can't even buy the feet. So, next time I'm in San Francisco, I'll go to a Chinese butcher shop and I'll have to do what my aunt did. When I was a kid, they killed the chickens. It was horrible for a kid to see it running around without the head, but that's where, and the blood spurting, and then they plucked it. And it was a whole big, like circus. It was a big circus. At least you knew the chicken. They wouldn't buy a chicken that was laying in its cage. If the chicken laid there, they said, no, I don't want that one. They wanted the friskiest chicken. It's like when you pick a puppy, do you want one that's sick in a cage? I mean, you have sympathy for it, but you don't want it. You want the one that's jumping and barking. The same with a chicken. You want a healthy chicken. And the feet, thank you. How do you know if the chicken had cancer, for example? What, because it's on ice and they say it's a special brand? I had a friend, a bum, I told you. He's actually, this guy was the craziest person I knew. His mother was the one who used to get shot up with Benzedrine in New Jersey and then beat up her hands and say to her husband, Al, your son beat me up. Remember that story in Psychological Nudity? Well, his father originally made some money by selling second foods, or they call them bruised chickens in minority neighborhoods. And I felt very, when I heard it, I didn't like it. I didn't like the whole family. They always had a little more money than everybody, but they were the type that would have been black marketeers in World War II, which is coming to a neighborhood near you, I guarantee you, in your lifetime. But to get down to, so they sold bruised chickens to minorities who didn't know any better or had no choice, and they made a little extra profit. They were that kind of people. But, the world of politics through chicken feet is quite clear. But I want to go back to what Spengler wrote on the issue of who are the extraordinary Muslims. Because Obama insulted the American people when he said that the Muslim world is filled with extraordinary people. Well, actually, America is filled with extraordinary people. And the fact of the matter is the Muslim world is not filled with extraordinary people. And his proof is in the question. He says, really, what are their names? He said, name one extraordinary Muslim poet or musician or scientist. He says, Obama said this is a country of Muslims, Jews, Christians, non-believers, making everyone the same. But it's not true. We're not all the same. Not at all. He says, in the real world, the ordinary depends on the extraordinary, for it is the extraordinary citizens of a nation who set a mark for the aspirations of ordinary people. Cultures that can't produce extraordinary individuals can't survive. That bears on the other half of the president's assertion. It is true that most Muslims simply want a better life, and the 2 or 3 million American Muslims mostly are well-educated economic immigrants who value prosperity over tradition. But it is also true that among the 1.4 billion Muslims in the world, there are tens of millions who would rather kill or die than endure what they perceive as an intolerable humiliation. And he said it is this substantial minority that will not be content that should worry Obama. And then he goes on to the issue of the extraordinary person. He says, what did ambitious mothers tell their children years ago? They used to say, work hard and you might grow up to be like him or her. I had that happen. They were always pointing out to me somebody who achieved something. Look at that person, they would say to me. Look at that person. He got all A's. She got all A's. Look at that. They won a Nobel Prize. He discovered the cure for this. He invented the chemistry for that. Every day of my life, somebody extraordinary was held up to me as a role model. And then Spengler goes on to say, successful cultures produce people whose contributions resonate through the world. Scientists, poets, musicians, entrepreneurs, and philosophers. Just as he says, just one great individual can transform a nation by setting an example for ambitious youth. Thanks to the composer John Sibelius, Finland, with just 5 million people, became a force in the world of classical music. But woe unto cultures whence comes no contribution to the rest of humanity. Where are the Muslim scientists, the Muslim novelists, the Muslim athletes, and the Muslim musicians? And he says, apart from political leaders, a reasonably diligent reader of a quality newspaper in the West will not be able to name a single Muslim distinguished in any field of human endeavor. Excluding the politically awarded Peace Prize, Muslims have won only 3 Nobel Prizes since their inception more than a century ago, or one for every 450 million Muslims alive today. By contrast, there have been 169 Jewish Nobel laureates, excluding the Peace Prize, or about one for every 89,000 Jews alive today. During the past century, a Jew was 5,000 times more likely to win a Nobel than a Muslim. And I like to interject something, which is why a loser like Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, hates Jews so much, because he's jealous of them. Do you understand that? Well, it's a big story. Jealousy is what brought Hitler to power and what made him hate the Jews. And it's how this Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, is trying to become another Hitler. And Obama's making a huge mistake by talking to the Hitler of our time, because the Hitler himself mocked Obama the next day and said, this proves America is weak. Well, I could go on, and I'd like you to read this article on michaelsavage.com from the writer Spengler. And he'll tell you about the Muslim world and ask you why they haven't produced many extraordinary people, you know. And he says, 50 million aging Persians might be more concerned about 175 million young Pakistanis to their east than about Israel. And he said, most Muslims want to better their lives, as Obama said, but their lives are getting worse rather than better. And nothing they know can make things better. In theory, there might be a future state of the world in which the Islamic world could live in peace and prosperity, but today's Muslims cannot get there from here. If Obama spends more time reassuring and less time trying to fix the Muslim world, he will do better by default. America's policy towards the incurables should be to live and let die. That's what he says, not me. I have an even more extreme position than he does, which is I'm sick and tired. I am sick and tired of the big lie. I am sick and tired of the big lie. I am sick of it. New York City, WOR, Jack, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, can you tell me who living that you admire that's doing a good job for America?
Nobody.
I don't understand that.
No, I don't know. Who should I look up to? Tell me. Tell me who I should look up to. It's a sad statement. I'm not into sports, so I don't have any sports figure that I look up to. So who should I admire today? Is there a scientist that you know of who was on the par of the great scientists of even 50, 40 years ago? Well, who was the great scientist of our time?
But is there someone in government that you think is...
No, let's go on. Let's go down the list. Name a great scientist. There is none. I don't know of one. We have technicians. I'm technologists, but where's the scientists? They've been driven out of America. Pure science has been killed in America. There's almost no pure science. I grew up admiring scientists, by the way, and people of that type. But I don't know of a great scientist. Can you name one great composer? No, there is none. Can you name a great artist in America today? No, there is none. So who should I admire? The fictions that the media creates? I don't know who to admire. I don't see anyone out there that inspires me, Jack. You mean in the political world?
Yeah, in the political world.
Nobody. They're even worse. They're nothing but sound bites and suits. Thanks for the call. No, I'm sorry. I know I'm supposed to tell you. Yes, Jack, who do I admire? Why I admire that single mother struggling to raise the minority child despite the difficulties. Yes, Jack, I admire the person who is struggling without a paycheck today because of the evil Republicans. I really don't, want to give you one of those stories. I'll do it my way. Saturday night, I was invited to an emigre dinner in San Francisco. The Russian emigres put on a dinner about every year. I had been to one 2 years ago, and I was invited at the last minute, which is an insult. Okay, but I went anyway. It was a black tie affair because I like the Russian people. And I went to the dinner, and what's amazing to me is that these are people who have been in this country 15, 20 years, most of them, and they're all integrated very well. It was 50, 60% professional people, high percentage of doctors, high percentage of lawyers, high percent of computer engineers. These are people who came here with nothing and have made something out of their lives. They didn't come here to plant the bomb in a Macy's parking lot. They didn't come here to set a school on fire. They came here to be free and to exert their intelligence and to offer something to society and be rewarded for it, and they've done so. But, of the people I met there, everyone took me aside, and they whispered the same thing to me. They said to me, Mike, I listen to your show. I know everything you say. I know every one of your callers, and they do. They're really great listeners, at least the people I spoke with who came up to me. And they said to me, you're 100% right. This country is increasingly becoming like the ex-Soviet Union. So I said to him, well, don't worry, we'll stop it. And he looked at me and he said, who's we, Michael? You and I? We're going to stop it? He said, the American people are dumb. They don't understand that they're over 60% on the road to the ex-Soviet Union. They don't even understand how corrupt the system is and what has happened to this country. Whereupon I just tuned out because I have to believe. I have to have faith that something's going to happen to save this country. If not for me, then for my children, That's why I'd rather talk about chicken feet, the world through chicken feet, because just as chickens used to come with their parts, including the feet, and today you can't even find the feet unless you go search them out, it's the same with politicians. They have clay feet. I mean, I can make the analogy if you want. They all have clay feet. The politicians are empty suits. They don't have all their parts. I mean, play with it if you want. Take the Play-Doh of my mind and turn it into something. Houston, Texas. Mac, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call, Michael. I was wondering, what you mentioned about the chicken feet. I'm originally from Nigeria, and we eat that all the time. The chicken feet, the head, the brain.
Right. Exactly. You ate the whole animal, and that's because there were phenomenally powerful nutrients in these chicken parts that have been taken away from us, and we're only getting mainly. And listen to this. This is interesting, Mac. The obsession with low-fat diets in America has actually made Americans less healthy rather than more healthy. Yes, it may have reduced the fat and made them have lean muscle mass, but they're denuded of many essential nutrients, which they're not getting.
Absolutely, that's true. And even the goats and the cows, when it comes to even their testicles, we dare not touch the testicles.
Now, please, this is a family show. I don't want to hear about you and your goat's testicles. Sorry, Mac.
Well, no.
I'm joking. Come on. It was a joke.
I understand. We did.
Well, I remember I went to Israel twice in my life, and the last time I was a long time ago. I haven't been there since 1979, 80. I don't even remember, early 80s. And I had read that the Yemenite people of, the Arabic countries used to eat betzim, which were the testicles of a bull. And I remember I went to some Yemenite restaurants and ordered them, and it was no big deal, you know. I mean, a lot of cultures eat that.
Yeah, we actually saved it for the man of the house, and that was his. So nobody else there touched it because it was exclusive for the man of the house, and it was we ate everything, intestines, everything. But you know, it's when I came to this country when I found out that you know Americans think is, you know, everything is
They think it's disgusting. Like, it won't even eat a chicken neck.
Right.
I remember once I ate a leg of lamb in a restaurant. It must have been 20 years ago. And I used to like to eat the bones. And I mean crack the bones with my teeth and suck the marrow out of the bones. People in the restaurant are looking at me as though I were an animal because I was eating the bone of a lamb, you know, after I ate the meat.
It's food.
I know. But you see, Mac, I'm blessed in a certain way, or lucky if you want to put it in the non-religious term. I'm lucky in that I'm an immigrant son and a little bit of the old world is still left in me. You know what I'm saying, Mac? I have a bit of the old world still in me.
That's true.
Hey, Mac, thanks. You're a good sport. Thank you very much. So next I'll give you a baitseem recipe if you'd like that. I don't know how to make that part of the animal. Blank, said the queen. If I had two, I'd be king. But I don't even want to say, you know, I don't even want to go there. 1-800-449-8255. How could Obama be appointing tax cheats, lobbyists? How is this possible? How is he getting away with this, I'd like to know. I mean, I don't care if you voted for the guy, but the man said he would be different, he would have change, and so far he's appointed 17 lobbyists. Don't you people see that you've been had? Can't you admit you've been had? You don't even want to accept it. What's the difference? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Let's see the other topics I have here for you today. Well, I'm saying that Obama, my main point today is that Obama is trying to bring Chicago to the rest of America. Everything he learned about playing politics in Chicago is now being foisted upon the rest of the country. And you know what? With a little help from his friends in the media, he's just liable to pull off the backroom dealings of Chicago. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Of politics through chicken feet. That's what we're doing today on the Savage Nation. I know it's Super Bowl. I didn't watch it, truthfully. I know someone made a great catch. I heard about it. And, you know, I know that not everyone who watches the game is, you know, like blank. I understand. I know a lot of people who loved it, all of that. The street was filled with cars, Super Bowl. You couldn't even buy a six-pack of beer today. I had someone go out and get me a six-pack. The stores are sold out. Country, it becomes like numb. I see Macy's going to eliminate 7,000 jobs. I don't understand where the jobs are anyway. Do you ever try to buy a pair of underwear in Macy's recently? You got to go counter to counter like a homeless person begging for a cashier. I don't know if they're going to have a self-checkout after that because there's no one there anyway. That's the latest thing. 7,000 jobs they're going to eliminate so that the bum on the top can buy himself a new TriStar jet or whatever. That's all it is. Fire 30,000 people, buy two new jets. Fire 7,000 people, you get one new jet. We're speaking about cars, and you know, not all countries are equal. I heard that Egypt tried to make a car called the Aswan, but it flooded, and they gave that up. I heard Syria tried to make a car called the whatever, and it caught fire. It just exploded. You could make up a whole analogy. How come Iran, if it's so great, they can't make a car? Mr. Big Shot over there hates the whole world. Not one Nobel scientist, poet, nobody in Iran. Nobody. A country that lives in fear of being killed for speaking out. The world of politics through chicken feet. New York City, WOR. Joe, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
About chicken feet. Now, I remember when I was a kid, my mother used to make chicken feet in the soup, and we'd always fight. The kids
right.
used to fight to see who gets it.
But right, the because they tasted good. But what I was getting at is chicken feet are rich in a certain nutrient called hyaluronic acid, which is very important for health.
Well, my mother didn't know that, but that was probably very true. But what you don't understand is that the reason you can't get chicken feet in New York is because the Board of Health determined that it's got a lot of dirt in the feet, and it spreads disease.
My friend, the object is to cook the feet before you eat them.
Well, and you're saying that
who eats a raw chicken foot?
Did you know that they passed a law that you can't have belly locks, what's it called, chicken...
What?
Chicken?
Bloomberg will pass a law telling you what air you can't breathe.
Well, anyway...
Everything is his business, from chicken feet to smokers. Of course chicken feet are dirty. They're called feet. But what you do is you cook them. Then they're not dirty, Joe. What kind of idiot tells you they're dirty? They're not dirty after they're cooked. That's why you're not supposed to eat raw food. That's why the schmucks who eat raw diets are so sickly looking. You ever drive by a raw food place in your city? Take a look who's sitting in, the emaciated, anemic people. They're all eating raw food. Raw food. They're not an insect. You're a human being. You're supposed to eat cooked food. In fact, Claude Lévi-Strauss, the great anthropologist, wrote a seminal work called The Raw and the Cooked. And the object of it, I mean, I remember when I was working for one of my degrees, I had to read Claude Lévi-Strauss in the original French, which I told you about once. And it was a seminar, a graduate seminar that I took where it was only the professor and I. And he was a very famous professor himself from Harvard. But he made me prove to him that I could read Claude Lévi-Strauss in the original French. And I did. I couldn't speak the language well, but I could, you know, I could read well enough to translate it. But the essence of the treatise, The Raw and the Cooked, is that the principal thing that separates primitives from a civilized people is the cooking of food. That is, prior to fire, man ate raw food. And it was the advent of the discovery of fire, and then, of course, the discovery that cooking, for example, mastodon meat made it taste better or whatever, that distinguished the difference between the truly primitive and the beginning of civilization. You understand that? Raw food. Of course, occasionally you eat something raw, a carrot or a piece of celery, if it's washed and it's organic. But to live on an all-raw diet, and I've heard all of the malarkey about enzymes. They don't even know what they're talking about. You ask the next schmuck who's telling you about a raw diet what an enzyme is. See if they can tell you what an enzyme is. They don't know what an enzyme is. They have no idea what it is, but they an enzyme. All these nutritionists out there, they're like RNs. Excuse me, like RDs. They're as good a nutritionist as my dog is. Nutritionist. What do they know about nutrition? They know what the American Dietetics Association peddles them to tell.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Nation, thank you for being part of it. You know the phone number. There's no point in my reading it out to you. Let's hear a little more doo-wop just for a minute. That's a smashing headache for 3 days now. Can't get rid of it. It's from Obama. I have a headache from Obama. I have a permanent migraine from this guy. Says that he's going to have new, clean, better. 17 lobbyists so far. 5 executive orders and 17 lobbyists and counting. One tax sheet after another. And he gets away with it. Why? Because of the empty suits in the media. The people without chicken parts, so to speak. That's what I'm talking about. The world of politics through chicken feet. I'm making a bigger point. Is that you go to buy a chicken today and try to get the parts they're missing. You can try to get a politician that's a patriot. The patriotic parts are missing from the politician. You understand this? I love nautical things. There are many things I love that I never talk about really in any detail. One of the things I love nautical objects, nautical paintings. I just everything about boats I've always liked. Why, I don't know. How do you figure these things out? You discover what's in yourself, and you know. Certainly my family wasn't nautical. They were landlocked. I'm no big ocean racer, but I do a lot of boating on the bay. So yesterday, for example, it was so gorgeous out here in the Bay Area. I know there's horrible weather in the rest of the country. In fact, if it was a Republican in office already, the empty suits in the media would be screaming that it's McCain's Katrina. Where is Obama? How come he hasn't turned the power back on? Why are there ice storms? Why hasn't he stopped the ice storms? But because it's Obama, he can get away with anything, okay? So anyway, it was gorgeous out here in the Bay Area yesterday, like an early spring day. So I wanted to go boating. So we went out to a place, and there's a little interesting politics involved as well. We went on our boat about an hour away to a place called Mare Island. Mare Island is where the U.S. mothball fleet used to be kept. When I first moved to California, if you would drive up to Lake Tahoe and cross Highway 17, you'd see all the way down the estuary there were ships, the mothball fleet. And it was beautiful for me to look at because it brought to mind not only the victories of World War II and the heroism of America of that time, but it brought back to me the familiarity of the Brooklyn Navy Yard, because when I was a kid and we drive over the Williamsburg Bridge to my father's store, I'd look down and I'd see ships, actual real warships being repaired in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And to the right, there was the Domino Sugar Company, which I think is still there. But I was always amazed that shipyards, the word I'm looking for is the scale of construction. The scale of the work in shipyards is something awesome, something to behold. So anyway, there's nothing left in this mothball fleet. It's all been scrapped. There's one broken down aircraft carrier sitting there and some broken down old cruise ship. But you see the remnants, the skeletons of the old cranes from World War II, the abandoned Mare Island Naval Shipyard buildings and whatnot, and you can almost see a time, another era gone by. You know, as there are many places like this left in America. But there's nothing profound in what I'm saying to you. It's just a ride of nostalgia going down the lane. You come to the end of the estuary, and there's a bridge, a drawbridge, and, you know, we docked in some broken-down boatyard there. There was nothing but, like, boats sinking in the water. It's pretty dismal. I used the opportunity to walk the dogs, got back on the boat, and came home. And I ran the boat at 3,000 RPM. Normally, I run this boat at 1,800, 2,000. I've babied it for 5 years. It's interesting. It's a side note for the mechanics amongst you. I've been having a bit of a smoke problem. The boat's fine. It started every time I ever tried to start it up in 5 years. Great product. Great engines. These are the greatest engines ever made, the Cummins diesel engine. And believe me, I don't make anything for saying this. It's unbelievable American quality in manufacturing. These engines have always started, but I don't like the smoke. So my mechanic came out and he said to me, do you run this boat like you own it or like you rent it? I said, I run it like I own it. I baby it. He said, that's your problem. He says, I want you to take it out. Diesel engines need to be run hard and run it hot so you blow the carbon out. So I said, how do you like that? Because I always treat machinery as though I baby machinery, and I guess it's not good. You know, I tend to treat them too nice. Well, to make a long story short, he had cleaned the turbos for me last week, got all the carbon out of them. Well, I took her out, went under the Richmond Bay Bridge, went past the so-called Brothers Islands. You can look them up on Google Maps. Big Brother and Little Brother are watching you. I guess that's why I like the Brothers Islands. And then the run up to the Carquinez Straits is a good 35, 40 minutes. I flatted out on the engines, 3,000 RPM. The boat skated. I mean, she was flat. This is a 19-ton boat, and this thing just sailed over the water, just flat and calm. Went to Mare Island. Coming back, as I'm coming out of the estuary, I see a freighter, you know, skidding down the Sacramento River, going out the Carquinez Straits into the bay. Obviously, she was going to leave the bay. And I love freighters. I've always loved the colors of freighters. That's one of my hobbies, is looking at freighters. I just love them ever since I've been a kid, always imagining what's on them, where are they going, where are they coming, what's inside the belly of the beast. So I see this freighter with his orange hull riding high in the water, and she's zipping along, going out the straits. And I must have been a half a mile down the channel, and I said, I got to really get on this, because if I get stuck behind it going out of the channel, I'm going to be sucking fumes for the rest of the day. All right, so I get out of the channel. I open the boat up, and I'm trying to pass this freighter. And I was doing about 14.8 knots. The freighter must have been doing 10 because I was gaining on her. But it took me at least 2 miles to catch up to her, and then I had to watch out for not being sucked into the waters of the freighter. Even though it wasn't a giant super freighter, it was still kicking up enough turbulence that my boat was getting, you know, the action of it. I stayed all the way over to the port side of the channel. He was all the way over to the starboard side, but I was still getting the action of his waves. And then I finally passed him, and it was something to behold passing that freighter and kicking it out, another 3,000 RPM coming all the way up to the brothers again, and then home to sunset, and here I am, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
So Obama said he would talk with Iran. The next day, Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, says it shows America's weak. Exactly what we predicted. We said he's going to wind up being the, you know, unfortunately, and I shouldn't say it over and over again, but it's looking more and more like Obama is definitely like that British politician of his time, who you all know by now who it is. I won't even mention his name, who went to see Herr Hitler and came back and said, I have a piece of paper with Hitler's speech in my hand saying there'll be no more war and Anglo-German relations have never been better. The Chamberlain came out just now. It says the White House is backing off talks with Iran and Syria. The White House on Sunday sought to distance itself from advisors to Obama who reportedly met with Syrian and Iranian officials. And who are the Americans who were there? Well, a think tank known as the United States Institute of Peace, which of course is a communist front group, said that they had met for more than 2 hours in Damascus with the Syrian dictator, Assad. The group included Ellen Lapson, a former White House advisor under President Bill Clinton, and a member of the Obama transition team. So all the wobblies of the Obama administration are starting to run into stone walls with reality now that they're going to actually act out what they wanted to do, their dreams. Their psychosis is being acted out, and they're winding up understanding that there are ramifications to psychotic behavior. 1-800-449-8255. I guess because I've been talking about chicken feet and nautical things, I'm going to be flooded with sailors who eat chicken feet and stuff, but I'm open to that. I'm open to that. How come there's no coverage of the flooding, the electricity failures? Answer, because Bush isn't in power. I wrote last week on my show, this is Obama's Katrina right now. Where's FEMA? I mean, there's a new administration, there's FEMA, we have national disasters and nothing's being done because the king has no clothes. After all, there can be no disaster because Obama's the president and he's great. And since he's great, there are no disasters. And while Bush was president, he was no good. And so the smallest disaster became the biggest disaster. And he was personally responsible for an act of God. That's the answer to that one. Don't you understand this? That's why I'd rather talk about chicken feet. New York, Frank, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, Dr. Savage, real quick. You were asking about extraordinary Muslims. Two of my doctors saved my life, and they're Muslims. And
that's all well and good, but we're talking about extraordinary Muslims, people who have won Nobel Prizes or who are world famous of that type. We're not saying there aren't good people out there and competent people who happen to be Muslim. Do you understand what I'm saying or not?
Yes, I do. Well, anyway, I can't say their names because they'd probably be killed.
But again, you didn't hear a word I said. What is wrong with people? I didn't say Muslims are bad or that there aren't wonderful Muslim doctors. That's not the point. The article was about something else entirely. The article was, where are the extraordinary Muslims? And the answer is there's been no extraordinary Muslim thinker since the 12th century. Unless you can name one. I don't know who that would be. Someone who's invented something. Someone who's devised a new technique. That's what we're talking about. Not wonderful doctors. All doctors should be wonderful. Frank, thanks. See, this is the problem. Brainwashed. People don't even understand what you're saying to them. Everything they take out of context, because there is no context. How can they have context if they don't understand what you're saying? Obama the Magnificent says he's going to speak to Iran. The next day, Obama runs into a stone wall when the Hitler of our time says that Obama's negotiations are a sign that America is now passive and weak. Did that make it to your local newspaper? The piece of garbage going out of business? No, it didn't make it. Why? Because the idiots in journalism don't want you to think anything negative about anything that Obama the Magnificent does. The day after Obama said he would talk to Iran, The Hitler of our time, the wolf man, the man who looks like a wolf man, okay? The little wolf man says that this proves that America has become passive and weak. Okay? The golem of our time says that. Iranian so-called president, Madman Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, said that it proves that America is passive and weak. That's what he said the next day, the wolfman of Iran. You understand this? Bush, to his credit, refused to hold talks with this psycho, which he dubbed part of an axis of evil, unless it suspended uranium enrichment. Okay, but Bush was thwarted in dealing with Iran militarily, which is the only answer anyway. And I'm going to say it to you now so you finally hear it. History will prove that I'm right again. And it really doesn't matter to me whether I'm right or wrong. It's unfortunately true, though, that what I'm about to say is true. It's unfortunate that I have to tell you this, that it is better to go to war with an adversary when he is weaker rather than when he is stronger. And it would be much better to go to war with an adversary before he has a nuclear weapon than after he has a nuclear weapon, particularly an adversary who's threatening to use it against you. Moron, you can't win with these people with psychobabble peace talking. Psychobabble peace talking works amongst feminists on college campuses where they can control the dialogue, meaning it's a monologue. That's why I don't want to do politics today. That's why I'd rather talk about chicken feet. What world are you people living in? What world are you living in? The rookie makes a mistake of closing Gitmo. The rookie makes a mistake of affording the killers in Gitmo the rights that they don't have, which are the constitutional rights to a trial. These are major mistakes. These are signs of weakness. These are signs of a rookie and weakness. But liberals don't understand this. They don't understand that the freedom they enjoy is based upon the strength that has been exerted by our military for these last 50 years. It has nothing to do with negotiating with the wolfman. Nothing whatsoever. People just don't understand until it's too late. Just don't understand that you can't work something out with a wolfman who's crazy and out to get you. It's just unbelievable to me how naive liberals really are. They just don't understand that if you bare your throat to a jackal, it's going to tear it open. You cannot negotiate with the Hitler of our time. Neville Chamberlain of England thought the same way when he felt that he could reason with Adolf Hitler. And what he got was a piece of paper that was worthless. And of course, Ahmadinejad is the same as Hitler. Not that he has the power of Hitler, but he has the mind of Hitler. Wishful thinking will not change reality. It's unbelievable to me, over and over and over again. Over and over and over again. So here we are, repeating history. Those who do not know history are condemned to repeat it. And those who went to Harvard and wrote for the Harvard Law Review apparently do not know history. Because if they did, they would have heard what Hitler said, what Chamberlain said when he came back from speaking, having spoken with Hitler. Listen.
This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine. We, the German Führer and Chancellor, and the British Prime Minister, have had a further meeting today and are agreed in recognizing that the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries and for Europe. We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
And of course, Hitler was lying to Neville Chamberlain, the socialist liberal of his time. And Hitler went ahead and did what Hitler does, exactly the way the wolfman of Iran is continuing to do what he wants to do, while duping naive liberals like Obama into thinking that he wants to talk with them when he's just trying to buy time. You don't understand history, you're going to repeat it, unfortunately. It would have been far better to have stopped Hitler at Munich than try to stop Hitler long after Munich. Fewer American men would have died. Their blood wouldn't have been spilled if Hitler had been stopped before Munich. Okay, do you understand this? Now, in our backyard here in South America, you've got Chavez fomenting anti-Semitism because he's in bed with Ahmadinejad, who hates Jews. And Chavez positions himself as a modern socialist who is not racist, but he's exactly the same. And so they trashed and vandalized a synagogue in Venezuela. And then the moron down there, Pineapple Head's cousin, comes out and says he's against the trashing of the synagogue, when you and I both know nothing happens in that country without him being behind it.
Savage.
I may as well get political right now. Daschle is now trying to say he made an honest mistake, another one with an honest mistake. Now, I want to ask you something. If you made an honest mistake in failing to pay more than $120,000 in taxes, do you think the IRS would understand? Let me ask you, you think they'd understand? Now the clown gets up there, Daschle, today and tells the senators, nobody's perfect. It was a mistake. It was a mistake. Now, just last week, these corrupt senators confirmed Timothy Geithner as Treasury Secretary, despite his tax dodging. And Obama appoints 17 lobbyists to offices. And again, he's still Mr. Change and Mr. Hope. What Barack Obama doesn't want you to know about Tom Daschle, I want you to know about Tom Daschle. And it's up on michaelsavage.com. I won't be able to read it all to you. But you should know that following his election defeat as senator in 2004, Tom Daschle took a position with the lobbying arm of the K Street law firm Alston & Byrd. Now, because Daschle was prohibited by law, whatever that means, from lobbying for 1 year after leaving the Senate, he instead worked as a special policy advisor for the firm. You see, he wasn't a lobbyist. He was even slimier than a lobbyist. He became a special policy advisor. Not a lobbyist, of course, because he's a slimier creature than most. He even changed the name lobbyist to special policy advisor. And who were the clients of this law firm? CVS Caremark, the National Association for Home Care and Hospice, Abbott Laboratories, and HealthSouth. They're all good firms. But they paid the law firm $5.8 million to represent companies and associations before Congress and the executive branch, with 60% of that money coming from the health industry. Daschle was recruited by the other disgrace, the former Republican disgrace, Bob Dole. And Daschle's salary from Alston & Byrd for the year 08 was $2 million. Isn't that nice? Now, what about his woman, his gal, Linda Hall, Daschle's wife? He's been married to this nice lady since 1984. What Obama doesn't want you to know about his wife, was that she was acting administrator of the FAA in the Clinton administration. She then became a Washington lobbyist for American Airlines, Lockheed Martin, and Boeing. Daschle is board member of the Mayo Clinic, which is a major recipient of NIH funds. Daschle has been a paid consultant and advisor to Leo Hendry's intermediate partner since 2005, during which time he received from Hendry access to a limo and chauffeur. He did not declare the service on his annual tax forms as required by law. As you well know, he didn't pay taxes on this. It was an honest mistake because he's human. There's an even better article on this from, surprisingly enough, Salon Magazine, which is no friend of conservatives. And I think we have linked up the Salon Magazine article on michaelsavage.com. I want to just check on it right now because I'm going to read from it because it's pretty good. Here it is. The Daschles feeding at the Beltway Trough. Glenn Greenwald. And this is a real good one. When Barack Obama announced in early December that he had selected Tom Daschle to be his Secretary of Health and Human Services, as well as his health care policy czar, Rolling Stone's Matt Taibbi, who had spent several months studying the inner workings of the 06 Congress to write about its corruption, wrote the following reaction on his blog. I know several reporters who are either officially or unofficially on whore factor duty, watching the rapidly kaleidoscopic transition picture and keeping track of the number of known whores and ghouls who for some reason have been invited to befoul the atmosphere of the next administration. Obviously, there's been some dire news on that front already. When Obama picked Tom Daschle to be the HHS secretary, I blank. In Washington, there are whores, and then there are whores, and then there is Tom Daschle. Tom Daschle, well, I can't read what he said about him, but he'd do something to a corpse for a cheeseburger. And then he says, true, he probably is only the second biggest whore for the healthcare industry in American politics. The biggest being Dr. Cat Torturer Bill Frist, whose visit to South Dakota on behalf of John Thune in 2004 was one of the factors in ending Daschle's tenure in the Senate. But in picking Daschle, who, as an advisor to the K Street law firm, Alston and Byrd, has spent the last 4 years burning up the sheets with the nation's fattest insurance and pharmaceutical interests. And he goes on, Obama is essentially announcing that he has no intention of seriously reforming the healthcare industry. This is all from Salon Magazine, not from a right-wing publication, but from a left-wing publication. He goes on, The Dashiells Feeding at the Beltway Trough by Glenn Greenwald. Great article. Regarding Dashiell, remember, we're talking about a guy who not only was a consultant for one of the top healthcare law firms in the country, but a board member of the Mayo Clinic, a major recipient of NIH grants, and the husband of one of America's biggest defense lobbyists. Wife Linda lobbies for Lockheed Martin and Boeing. Does anyone really think that this person is going to come up with a healthcare proposal that in any way cuts into the profits of the major healthcare companies? And he goes on. Obama supporters argue that Obama needs someone like Dashiell with credibility within the healthcare industry in order to achieve real reform. That's the standard explanation for most of what Obama does. He's only courting the establishment in order to change it. And though highly skeptical, I'm personally willing to withhold judgment until the actual end goes on and on. Now he gives him a pass. But he says about Dashiell that Dashiell embodies everything that is sleazy, sickly, and soulless about Washington. It's probably impossible for Obama to fill his cabinet with individuals entirely free of Beltway filth. But Dashiell oozes Beltway slime from every pore. Before he was elected to Congress 30 years ago from South Dakota, he had very, very few skills outside the political arena. He was an Air Force intelligence officer, listen to this, in the early 70s, then worked for 6 years an aide to South Dakota Senator James Aberzek. Now, by the way, I know this Senator Aberzek. He is one of the most distasteful individuals I've ever met in my life. Strangely enough, a professor took me to meet him in the 1960s, and he left me feeling as though I'd been around a vampire. And we go on to who Dashiell really is. So Obama in Chicago was always surrounded by sleazy characters, and you thought he was pure, and you thought he was different. And you say it's only the right-wingers are standing between him and reform and change. Then how do you explain that he would pack 17 lobbyists in his appointments, and he would appoint 2 to 3 tax dodgers in a row? It's not right-wingers who are making him do this. You understand this or not? Well, we can go on about Dashiell's feeding at the trough, but the fact of the matter is Tom Dashiell is a very, very sleazy man, in the opinion of many people who understand what he's done. So there it is. Tom is obviously a man unto himself, a sleazeball unto himself. A couple of sleazeballs like this is hard to find other than in Washington, in the slime of K Street. And here they are in the new Obama administration, and they're not right-wingers by any means. Here's another article from MichaelSavage.com. The police in New York City arrested the federal judge who was overseeing the liquidation of Bernie Madoff's collapse investment firm. You see, the judge was arrested for smacking his wife around in their Park Avenue apartment. Guess it got to him. Let's see what else we have. Bill creates detention camps in the U.S. for emergencies. That's from WorldNet Daily on my website. Your friends at Fox News should know that the News Corporation has suffered a downgrade. You won't read this in any of their publications or websites or hear it from any of the sock puppets on Fox News. But they're blaming Rupert Murdoch himself. Did you believe this? Would you believe this? The alleged cloudy vision of the media giant's iconic founder is cited as a reason to sell rather than buy News Corp stock, along with the standard current economic reasons. That's a pretty astonishing story. You should read it. Auschwitz survivor dies at 100 in fire at his house. Can you believe this? A Brooklyn man who survived both world wars, the Auschwitz gas chambers, and the deaths of 4 wives perished at age 100 when he was trapped in a fire in his Williamsburg home. He went to a synagogue every day, including the morning he died, when a relative said he returned home for a forgotten prayer shawl and was caught in the flames. He lived for God, said his granddaughter, a very humble man. Neighbors called Weiss a lively man who seemed younger than his years. 100-year-old man, and he still walked without a cane. He still walked on his 2 feet. To be killed in a fire? It's a tragedy, said a neighbor who works at the mini-mart where Weiss bought chocolate for his grandkids. When firefighters arrived at 9:04 a.m. Saturday, flames had engulfed a row of buildings in the apartments near the Williamsburg Bridge. The fire was so intense it was deemed unsafe for firefighters to enter the building. Cause of the fire remains under investigation. Weiss's body was found under the dining table. He was not burned and apparently died of smoke inhalation. Born in Romania, Weiss was in her early 30s when he was sent to the Nazi concentration camp, where his pregnant first wife, Rivka, and three children were killed by the German Nazis. His grandson said his grandfather was minutes away from being forced into the death chamber himself. He was in line to be burnt, the grandson said. For some reason, two soldiers pulled him out of the line. He had no idea why. Our theory was that he was a strong-looking man and they could use him for work. After the war, Weiss moved to Israel, became a truck driver. He and his second wife had two girls and four boys. She died of cancer years ago, and the widow moved to Brooklyn, where he earned a living in a knitting factory, despite his difficulty learning English. Now, they do say that all Jews are rich, but apparently Mr. Weiss was not a rich Jew. In fact, he was a poor Jew, but he was a religious Jew, so he was rich in the way that Jews are supposed to be rich. I'll be right back. Savage. Turn out to be the most corrupt administration in American history if this keeps up. 17 lobbyists, one tax cheat after another. It's utterly unbelievable to me how they're getting away with it. Let's go to the callers here on the Savage Nation. In New York on WOR, Ziggy, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Yes, Dr. Savage. Isn't it funny how things have changed? Al Capone went to prison for tax fraud. Nowadays, tax fraud gets you a wonderful government job. I think that's just absolutely
hilarious. I think it's amazing what you just said. That Al Capone, they couldn't get him. He was the Teflon Don of his time, and they had to bring him down on tax evasion. And here we have two known tax dodgers who have not been imprisoned but appointed by Obama.
I think that's...
So you mean if Al Capone were around today and it was found that he owed the U.S. government taxes, he might be appointed by Obama to be secretary of some department? And he would say it was just an honest mistake?
FBI. Head of the FBI would be perfect.
Oh, God, don't even. Please don't say that. I haven't had a bad headache since last week from what I'm watching going on in Washington. God, I can't take any more. Thanks, Ziggy. Oh, Lord. Mobile, Alabama. Chad, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I'd like to hear more about... You know, back when Daschle was in office and he was head of the Senate, his wife was the lead lobbyist for Boeing. And we're still dealing with this deal with trying to get the refueling tankers built for the Air Force. And her proposal, which he tried to get passed through, was that the United States should rent the planes. We shouldn't buy our own airplanes. We should rent them from Boeing at an excess cost to the taxpayer.
Why would she not want Boeing? I remember that scandal, but didn't John McCain lobby for the French company?
I'm sorry. I
thought John McCain, it turned out, had lobbied for the French manufacturer, not for Boeing.
I don't know that he did. I think one of his staff members worked for...
Right, and that was swept under the rug during the campaign. Well, I'm definitely in favor of Boeing getting the tanker contract rather than... I think it was Lockheed Martin working with a French manufacturer. Isn't that true?
Yes, sir. You know, Mr. Murtha, the great Mr. Murtha, happened to be in our city earlier this week, touring the grounds where the proposed site is to be built to build these tankers. By the way, our city has won twice and been turned back.
Why don't people, instead of throwing shoes at politicians, start throwing chicken feet in them? Maybe that could be a new thing.
Well, it appears
uncooked chicken feet. I have an idea. Oh, wait a minute. I understand it now. Since they can't seize our guns, they're seizing our chicken's feet. And the reason they're doing it is they're afraid that they'll become attack feet. Like, you know, these are dangerous. Chicken feet are dangerous. If you don't like politicians, you might start throwing old, fetid chicken feet at them. And that could be... No, think about what could happen, Phil, if that could become a new form of protest. Instead of shoes like the Iraqi did with Bush, what if we started throwing chicken feet at politicians? Dirty, rotten chicken feet that have been let out to ripen in the sun. And I think it's a conspiracy to deny us a reasonable form of protest. That's why they've been denied. Oh, they saw this was coming, that Obama would be president, and they realized that they never get away with the Second Amendment and seizing our guns. But since chicken feet are not protected by the Constitution, they could seize our chicken feet. Look, guys, you know, at a certain point, the absurd has to be used, because otherwise there's nothing left. You're going to wind up crazy from it. Otherwise, you're going to wind up watching sports and pornography, and believe me, I do neither. So I'd rather be, utterly, impossible here. This is just nuts. Just nuts that they're appointing one rotten person after another to various positions. And the empty skirts in the media, the empty suits in the media don't say anything. It's the king has no clothes. Yeah, once in a while you hear a little peep here and a little peep there, peep there, peep, everywhere, peep, peep. But old Obama had a country, E-I-E-I-O, and on this country he had some farms, E-I-E-I-O, et cetera. You can make this. See, I'm into a chicken theme today. Today is the theme is chicken feet. Can somebody come up with a song for my show by tomorrow, sung to old Obama had a farm, E-I-E-I-O? I think we could have fun with the lyrics by tomorrow. Whoever writes the best old Obama had a farm, E-I-E-I-O, will win a free copy of the Farmer's Almanac here on the... Bakersfield Nancy, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Funny.
Nancy, what's on your mind?
Hi there. I've been waiting. I want your chicken recipe, soup, chicken soup recipe.
All right. When I see you in the old age home, don't worry. I'll give it. I'm joking. I'm not going to give a recipe. It's not that hard to make a chicken soup. There's nothing to it. But I'm not making it. The bottom line is I was going to make it tonight because I wanted the feet and the gizzard. I wanted it all. Because the nutrient I'm looking for is mainly found in the feet. It's also found in the cock's comb, meaning the plume of the rooster. But that you can't get. And they're rich in cartilage, and this cartilage is rich in hyaluronic acid, which is a component of vitreous humor, which apparently I had a problem with and a little minor arthritis. So I was looking, that's all. I mean, I can go buy, the hyaluronic acid. I don't want to buy it. And I'm not going to go for injections. I'd rather eat chicken feet and the cock's comb. That's all. I always look for the nutrients in food first. I'm a food first nutritionist. If you can find the whole food. Here in America, you can't even find the chicken feet. Is there an ethnic restaurant around the Bay Area that sells chicken feet? I'll bet like an Ethiopian restaurant would have it. I'm trying to think. Wait a minute. There's Chinese I know in Chinatown. I can get a chicken feet soup. They have bird's nest soup. They have shark fin soup. Oh, no, I don't want any feet from China, though. I don't want any chicken from China. Sorry, forget it. It gives new meaning to these boots are made for walking. I mean, if the chicken was raised with asbestos shoes, I wouldn't eat chicken from China. This is what they eat, Buster. It's the melanin in their food that's going to wind up in their flesh. Mississippi, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I was just thinking that old adage, birds of a feather flock together. All these birds that flock around Obama have dirty feet.
Oh, well, it's true. Why is he associating himself with so many contemptible, questionable people that even the left is saying enough is enough? Doesn't he understand that the honeymoon is over in America and that people are seeing through him? I mean, does he not see this?
No, he doesn't.
I'm going to make a prediction on this show that Obama will have had the shortest honeymoon in the history of America. He came in with the highest hope ever, because Bush was such a disaster as a president. This guy's young, speaks well, but he has made one mistake after another. 5 executive orders, playing nice with Iran and Syria, surrounding himself with tax dodgers and lobbyists. It's Chicago on a national level. It's the Chicagoization of the United States of America, Tom. And I think the American people, even the honest liberals, are starting to say enough is enough. I think they're catching on. This guy's not got the honeymoon he thinks he has. Yeah, the media may be covering for him, but they can only do that for so long. He's not going to have 2 years of good approval ratings. He's not going to have a year of good approval ratings. I can guarantee you that his approval ratings have already plummeted. If you got an honest poll going, I don't mean a day after the Super Bowl. You give this another week of him appointing lobbyists and tax dodgers, and you're going to see Obama's approval ratings plummeting. The honeymoon is already over. That's my opinion. And if you want to read about it from left-wing publications, go to michaelsavage.com. Because the best disclosure is from Salon about the dirty Daschles. How's that? I'm going to not mince words. It's a disgrace. Another tax cheat?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I think we've suffered from an extremism in this country in the past of relying only on private sector activity and having too little government. It's possible to have too much government, no question, but it's possible to have too little.
So let me ask the question that's on everyone's mind right now. How's it going living with your mother-in-law?
Fortunately, I love my mother-in-law.
I, Hillary Rodham Clinton,
Do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith. And allegiance to the same. That I take this oath freely. Without any mental reservation. Or purpose of evasion. And that I will well and faithfully. Discharge the duties of the office. On which I'm about to enter. So help me God.
This is the Savage Nation, and here's what I've been talking about today. Obama's latest corrupt appointment. Yes, another one from the great Obama, Obama the Magnificent. His latest corrupt appointment is not only Timothy Geithner, the tax dodger, but Tom Daschle. Dashing Tom Daschle. Oh, whoops, forgot to pay $140,000 in taxes as well. Gee, these left-wingers are just so, well, forgetful. In addition to being a tax cheat, Daschle is a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry. Now, should the Senate confirm this man to be Secretary of Health and Human Services, which is responsible for reforming the healthcare system and implementing socialized medicine? What are you people thinking? The Republicans have raised almost no opposition to Obama's appointees. Former Republican Senator Bob Dole actually recruited Daschle to become a healthcare lobbyist. So you see, the Republicrats, or Democrats as I call them, are one and the same. Jerry Brown running for governor. Oh my, Governor Moonbeam wants back in office. Yes, he can't forget the days of glory. The far left pinko governor of California tried to convince the voters he had become a moderate. He even fooled me, by the way. I contributed to his campaign to become attorney general. And then I turned around and he tried to shove homosexual marriage down the throats of the voters by saying that their votes should be nullified. Now, this is the top law enforcement official in the state of California telling millions of Californians that their vote doesn't count. Will this relic of California's bad old days succeed in defeating the other one? You want to hear the other choice? Any Tucum Newsom versus Moonbeam? And you wonder why California's in the toilet? Because they live in the toilet! And then, of course, we talked about Obama the socialist. The media refuses to call Obama a socialist. Republicans refuse to call Obama a socialist. Well, but when a president aggrandizes power in a central government, which tries to control the day-to-day lives of citizens, as Obama proposes to do from cradle-to-grave government, that is not only socialism, but something more extreme. Asking if Obama is a socialist is like asking, is a tiger, or is a camel? Let's put that aside. And now another facet of the mental disorder known as liberalism. The interest and coverage of the Iraq War has been waning over the last few months, and has especially dropped since Barack Obama became president. No need to abash the war anymore. The only storyline that the news media has in mind is their coverage of the eventual pullout from Iraq. But have you noticed that now that Obama is president, the coverage of Islamic terrorists has become more serious? Even that idiot leftist, that clueless moron, Matt Lauer, when interviewing Obama, asked if there were intelligence reports that Obama reads that would have us shaking in our boots. Play the clip, please.
From what I understand, every day you go down there and there's that intelligence briefing on your desk, and it's got to contain some pretty sobering stuff. There are millions, tens of millions of people watching this broadcast right now, Mr. President, and if they were to have access to the same information you have now on a daily basis, how much less sleep would we all be getting?
Now, the newsmen have decided that terrorism is a story, but have decided at the same time that the elections in Iraq are not a real story. Have you heard about these? There have been free and fair elections in Iraq without any significant partisan or ethnic violence. No deaths. But the media says that the turnout was only 51%, and that's not good. Well, I think that was higher than the United States, by the way. What's happening here? Here with some insight about this is former Reagan defense official KT McFarland from ktmcfarland.com. KT, aren't free elections in Iraq a big story?
Michael, you know something? You called this one just right. I think the big issue and the big topic of the day is the Iraq elections. You know, they've shown that the surge has worked. Because over the weekend, we had Iraqi regional elections, and this is the first time in the Arab Muslim world that there have been open and free elections. And so there are a couple of things about it. One, the Sunnis participated. This is the first time in the Iraqi elections that all ethnic groups have participated in the elections. If you'll remember, the Sunnis sat the earlier elections out. Well, this time they participated, and they've shown up in really big numbers. The second point is that this is the first election that Iraq, and Iraq has had now several, but this is the first one that the Iraqis have run. They organized the elections. They got the candidates out. They've provided the security at the election polling places, and these elections have gone on without a hitch. So it's a huge success. The other thing, which is something that I haven't seen a lot of people talk about, is the number of women who are voting and running for office. About 3 years ago, there was a delegation of Iraqi women that came to the United States, and I met with one of them. She was a cabinet minister in the appointed Iraq government before they finished their constitution. And she said to me, watch this. Nobody's paying attention, but we are writing into the Iraqi constitution that 25% of all elected officials have to be women. We are the only country to really mandate it, and we are the only country that is going to come out with a large number of women at the polling places. And sure enough, that's what's happened. Over a third of the candidates for these regional positions have been women. And it looks like Iraq, I mean, which is an extraordinary thing in the Muslim world, Iraq is going to have an awful lot of women in high positions as a result of these elections. And so at the end of the day, the winners, it doesn't really matter which party wins in these Iraqi elections, because the winner of the election is the Iraqi people. They have shown to the world that they can run their own democracy, their own elections, their own candidates who are loyal to Iraq, not to other countries, and they've been successful. The thing that's important as well is not just is this great for Iraq, it is phenomenal, and the message this sends to the rest of the Arab Muslim world is huge. Iraq and Israel are now the only two countries in the Middle East that have open and free elections, and Iraq is showing that as the U.S. is on its way out of Iraq, that Iraq is now a self-sustaining democracy in the heart of the Arab Muslim world. And that has every reformer and every anti-reformer in the Muslim world taking note. You know, the agenda has now changed. Michael, in Arab countries and Muslim countries throughout the Middle East, which were dictatorships, sclerotic, hereditary dictatorships, second, third generation of leaders is now coming into the fore. Well, every one of those countries is now has the debate on, why not us? If Iraq can have democratic elections, why not Syria? Why not Egypt? Why not Saudi Arabia? So it's pushed to the fore the whole issue of reform throughout the Middle East. So at the end of the day, it's the surge and the Iraq war has cost too much in lives and treasure and everything else, but it has worked. This is a huge issue, and it will have reverberations throughout the Middle East and throughout the world for years to come. So, Michael, as usual, you were right on the surge, you were right on the Iraq policy, and thank goodness people like you are out there making the case, because at the end of the day, we have now won, or are just about to win, the Iraq war. Thank you very much. It's always a great pleasure to be with you, Michael.
Thank you, KT, for your report. I guess that's at least one thing George W. Bush got right. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
I've warned you for years against the left's entitlement attitude. It's not JFK's what we can do for the country, rather what the country can do for you. The Obama administration is only going to make this worse. Joining us today is Dr. Peter Bregan with a report on this entitlement society.
Thanks, Michael. This is Dr. Peter Bregan. I am a psychiatrist, and I want to help you to live like an American. Today's subject, what should we call the new society? What name should we give to the new society that's being fashioned before our eyes by the so-called stimulus packages and bills? In the past, there was a growing concern about creating an entitlement society. I think we are becoming something much more deadly than that. We need a new name for it. The Founding Fathers wanted to build a society where people have the opportunity to take charge of their lives and to pursue their own goals. Government would protect the freedom of individuals, but offer no guarantee of their economic safety, security, or success. We began as a responsibility society. Gradually, the responsibility society has been eaten away by the entitlement society. People no longer have to compete and take the consequences. Now they have the right to be provided for, to be given benefits without being required to earn them. Various forms of welfare are probably the most obvious entitlements. Healthcare and even housing are now becoming entitlements. Other government programs were originally presented as forms of insurance, such as unemployment insurance and Social Security. But they have also been transformed into entitlements. Future generations will be picking up the bill for us. Altruism is incredibly important within a society. Charity, fairness, and perhaps even economic stability call for some means of helping people who are having difficulty providing the necessities of life. But as helpful and even necessary as some of these entitlements have become, there's also an unintended effect, a problem with them. Whenever people receive money for an activity, any kind of activity, the money rewards that activity. Rewards reinforce or encourage behaviors. An otherwise dumb animal will learn an elaborate pattern of tapping on a button in response to receiving food pellets. Human beings have more volition or choice than that, but in general they tend to behave in ways that lead to their being rewarded. In contrast to reward, punishment tends to discourage or end the behaviors that led up to it. People try to avoid punishment. This is psychology 101 and common sense. Reward responsibility and people will grow more responsible, and they'll succeed more often. Reward irresponsibility, and people will grow more irresponsible, and they are more likely to fail. Like many of us, President Obama recently expressed outrage that executives and bailed out companies were taking huge bonuses for themselves. But why not? They saw that we were rewarding their companies, the companies they drove into the ground. So why wouldn't we want to reward them as well? 40% of Americans do not earn enough to pay taxes, and they will be benefiting from so-called tax breaks that spread the wealth to them. We are about to give a massive reward to people for not paying taxes. It won't be long before 50% of Americans aren't paying their taxes. After that, the sky's the limit. The current situation is actually much worse than simply rewarding failure. It's double whammy. We are also punishing successful people and institutions by withholding financial rewards from them and by taking money away from them in the form of higher taxes. Reward failure, punish success. It's a prescription for disaster, for an American tragedy, and we are watching it unfold. The home buyer who pays his mortgage is now financially handicapped in comparison to the one who does not. The company that stays afloat on its own is now handicapped compared to the one that's sinking. It's as if a team owner started paying the largest salaries and bonuses to his worst and most unreliable players while cutting the benefits for the best and most responsible players. One season would suffice to destroy his team and drive away its fans. How long can a society prosper when it rewards failure and punishes success? In a mood of anger and frustration, President Obama told us that this is not the time for companies to be seeking big profits. But big profits are the engine of the free market. They are the engine of progress. People making profits are the only people who can bring us out of the mess we're in. Instead, President Obama's programs are rewarding those who cannot make a profit and discouraging those who can. Helping the unfortunate, those who have fallen into hard times through no fault of their own, has become a good idea that's now gone wild. It's threatening the integrity of our nation. America has moved from a responsibility society to an entitlement society, and now is well on its way to becoming a failure society. That's the name for our new era, the failure society. We must not let this continue to happen. Before it's too late, we must stand up for our nation's founding values of freedom and responsibility. The time is now. We must stop the government from rewarding failure and punishing success. That brings us to what I call the primary principles, the weekly refrain of my weekly report. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. This is Dr. Peter Bregan urging you to live like an American. You can find me and listen to all these reports at Bregan.com. That's Bregin.com. Now back to Michael.
Thanks for your thoughts, Dr. Bregan. Hopefully we can move away from this entitlement mindset and bring it back to personal responsibility before it's far, far, far too late. This is the Savage Nation.
We can look at FDR. I mean, he had to make a lot of promises. He was put in a very bad position.
But it took a long time, and this is the interesting parallel. You know, when you heard Obama in that piece say, we're going to have to figure it out. I mean, his next promise is we're going to have to figure it out, which suggests we're going to, you know, deal with this as we go. That's very much what FDR did.
Barack Hussein Obama is constantly being compared to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the man who was president during the Great Depression in the 1930s and beyond. The liberal media is always saying that we need another New Deal. This was the package of far-left policies that FDR started in his first 100 days of office. What nobody cares to remember about FDR and the New Deal is that it was a socialist, and yes, even communist, set of policies. One of them, for example, the National Recovery Agency, was basically responsible for trying to implement the communist-style command economy in the United States. It micromanaged prices of goods and even went so far as to tell chicken farmers how much they could sell their chickens for. Within a few years of it being enacted, it was struck down by the Supreme Court of the United States. Incidentally, Obama's master plan for a stimulus has tens of millions of dollars for killing cows to drive up dairy prices. Roosevelt further tried to aggrandize power by expanding the number of Supreme Court justices when they struck down his New Deal legislation. Did you hear this? He wanted to add justices. This was defeated by the Congress. But if Roosevelt had not been stopped, there would have been an unfettered communist dictatorship in the United States of America. And remember, this is the man they're comparing Barack Hussein Obama to. Be frightened. Be very frightened indeed. Because this time, a few things are different. The liberal media is even more powerful today than it was in the 30s. They have at its disposal the far-left 24-hour cable news channels, the Internet, 90% of which belongs to the far-left. You see, in FDR's age, there were actually some conservative newspaper barons, such as William Randolph Hearst, who opposed FDR. No such conservative media moguls exist in this day and age who are willing to stand up against Barack Hussein Obama. So in truth, it's actually worse now than it was then. We are closer than we ever have been to a dictatorship in this country. So when you hear the liberal media praising FDR, understand that we are walking down the same Marxist path that was walked in the 1930s. Let's put that aside. Barack Obama, who promised us the cleanest, most honest, most squeaky clean administration in the world, has instead created the United States of Blagojevich. He has taken Chicago to a national level. All the backroom dealing, the lobbying, the payoffs, and the favoritism that Chicago was known for is now being played out on a national level. Examples: first, Obama appoints Eric Holder as Attorney General. Who is he? That's the man who helped pardon Mark Rich, the millionaire criminal, and Clinton campaign contributor. Then Obama appointed Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, even though her husband receives millions of dollars in contributions from foreign countries she will have dealings with. Then he appointed Timothy Geithner, who is a tax fraud, who then hired a Goldman Sachs lobbyist as his right-hand man at the Treasury, and then received a huge severance package from his last job, even though Obama has decried huge bonuses on Wall Street. But that's not the end of it. As second in command at the Pentagon, Obama appoints William Lynn, who has been a lobbyist for Raytheon. He then appoints Bill Richardson as Secretary of Commerce, who later had to withdraw his name because of scandal as governor of New Mexico. And now comes dashing Tom Daschle, the former minority leader of the Senate. What has he been doing since he was defeated in 04? Making millions, working as a lobbyist for the law firm of Alston and Byrd, who in 2008 alone brought in almost $6 million from health care companies such as HealthSouth, Abbott Labs, and the National Association for Home Care and Hospice. Daschle's a lobbyist, you see, and his wife is a lobbyist, you see. She went from working for the Federal Aviation Administration under Bill Clinton to lobbying American Airlines, Lockheed Martin, and Boeing. And now we find out Tom Daschle has tax problems as well. Daschle had a total of over $140,000 worth of back taxes that he didn't pay. He only forgot to pay them. And he only took care of them, strangely enough, in the month he was set to be approved by the Senate. Another tax cheat, another fraud, another member of the Obama administration. Listen, Blagojevich may be gone, but he's not forgotten. His practices, at least, are not forgotten. You see, Obama learned a lot about politics in Chicago, and now he's trying to bring Chicago to the rest of America. When I was 18 years old, I wrote an article for one of those little magazines in the East Village of Manhattan. It was my first published article. It was called Who Is at the Helm? I wish I could find it. It was a little teeny magazine that made it into the newspapers. It was the age of little magazines, little literary magazines. And the guy who ran it, I don't even remember his name. He was a black guy. I don't know whether he was a conservative or liberal. It didn't matter. I met him in Washington Square Park. Another street nut, probably like everyone I knew at that time. But I loved street nuts because at least they had passion, and they were very intelligent. And we used to argue over everything. But we used to meet at his apartment in Brooklyn. And my first article was called Who Is at the Helm? And I compared the social order to the social order of a sea creature called the Hydra. And I said in a Hydra there is no head. The cells are highly organized, and that's how the Hydra operates. Or something like that. I thought it was brilliant at the time. I remember showing it to my mother and their friends. They was like, what are you talking about, son? Hydra, Helm, what are you talking about? Go out and get me a bread. And when you're out, get me a pack of cigarettes to go with it. I don't know what you see, that's the thing about the average person. They don't care about anything. Except maybe they're right. Maybe they're smarter than me. They care about meat and potatoes issues. They care about raising children, putting bread on the table and raising the children, right? That's about it. Maybe it's all you can do in this world. Maybe the deception is so high that you've got to give up on the whole political system altogether. The media is so corrupt. The judges are so corrupt. You know, you don't know which way to turn. This is the Savage Nation. Okay, moving on. In the midst of what Al Gore and his environmental green shirts claim to be a cycle of global warming, the Midwest of the United States is experiencing some of the coldest weather that it's had in recent history. Massive ice storms have shut down entire cities in the Midwest. Some cities in Arkansas have been without power for days and have no idea when the power will go back on. The entire city of Louisville, Kentucky has been essentially shut down because of the ice storm. More than 1 million people in the midsection of the country are without power. And where is Barack Obama on this? Obama the Magnificent, who promised us that he would save us from the evil and incompetent Bush administration. When hundreds of thousands were homeless and without power during Hurricane Katrina, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, was slow to respond, why the rats in the liberal media went crazy attacking Bush mercilessly. Well, where is FEMA now? Where is the vermin in the media? Where are the vermin in the media now? Why do Obama and the government media complex seem to be so completely apathetic when a disaster of this scale has hit our nation's midsection? Could it be because Kentucky and Arkansas and many of the other states that are getting hit now are red states that didn't vote for Obama? Is it possible that there's a racial element involved in this? What would happen, for example, if there was major flooding in a largely Hispanic city? Would Obama be on the TV talking about it then? Would the vermin in the media have a camera in the face of every poor victim in that particular city? That seemed to be the case with Katrina, but for now the Midwest seems to be getting no support. FEMA, nowhere to be found. The only thing they're getting at the moment is a corrupt cabinet, a pork-filled stimulus, and the media telling them that global warming is upon them in the middle of an ice storm.
Savage.
Obama's campaign was running the idea of change, but we haven't really seen any real change. It seems that all that is coming out of the new administration is more big government, more handouts, more corporate welfare. In other words, business as usual. Take the stimulus package being pushed through Congress. We've talked about the pork, but did you know that buried inside this legislation is something that could undo two decades of welfare reform? That's right. Even Bill Clinton wanted welfare reform, but not Barack Hussein. Charles Hurt with the New York Post wrote an article on this entitled Change for the Worse, and he joins us today to talk to us about it. Charles Hurt, welcome to the Savage Nation. What do you see in the so-called stimulus that returns us to an era of big welfare?
Yeah, indeed, Michael. It seems to be something that very few people have sort of caught on to at the current moment. And in fact, a lot of the Republicans I've talked to on Capitol Hill didn't even realize it until I asked them about it. But buried deep inside the 650 pages of spending that makes up the House stimulus bill are buried four simple words that seem pretty innocuous on first reading, but they would have a devastating effect on the 1996 Welfare Reform Act, and in fact completely repeals a very important cornerstone of that welfare reform bill that obviously you will remember was forced through Congress by Republicans. And after having suffered some devastating setbacks in the 94 elections, President Bill Clinton, very much aware that his own second term was on the line, got forced into signing what was very unpopular among Democrats at the time, very unpopular among liberals, but has since proved to be one of the most successful reforms, social reforms, of the last 20 years. A cornerstone of that reform was putting a limit on the amount of federal tax dollars that could be sent to states. And it was a very specific limit. At the time, it was $16.4 billion plus another couple of billion that was in sort of an emergency fund. And that $16.4 billion has sort of inched up a little bit with inflation, but it's generally about that amount now. But in this bill, in four or five words buried deep in the bill, it completely erases the limit and says such funding as is necessary or something along those lines that is available in the U.S. Treasury. Basically, now, under this bill, the only limit on the amount of money, federal dollars, that would go to the states to pay for welfare, to pay welfare recipients would be, it's just completely removed. It's however much money is available and in the Treasury. The reason that at the time, the reason this was such an important reform in 1996 when they put the cap in place was that the very strong belief that the entire welfare system had become such an ingrained entitlement in the federal bureaucracy that there were never any efforts at the state level to curb the amount of money spent on it, and in fact, to curb the amount of dependency by the recipients on the federal government, and basically incentivizing them never to try to get out and find work and find independence and freedom from that reliance. And so this basically undoes all of that. And honestly, what I think is most interesting about it is the fact that when you go through the entire stimulus bill, there's obviously lots of spending on a whole range of things, both, you know, widely deemed as worthy, like road projects, though far fewer than what the Democrats have, initially sort of indicated there would be. But in reality, this whole package is social engineering. It's a giant you know, it's 15 years of pent-up liberal frustration in Washington where they have sort of, you know, Democrats have been out in the cold, and for the first time they have unfettered access to the all levers of the federal government, and they're going to get everything, pile everything onto this gravy train that they can, including rolling back the very successful efforts of welfare reform. Obviously, it leaves other important aspects of that welfare reform, but it sure does seem that it is a clear signal as to what their motives are, you know, now that Democrats control both chambers of Congress and the White House.
Do you think this marks the return of the federal welfare state? I certainly do.
Yeah, in fact, it is. It reestablishes the welfare state that has been sort of creeping into the federal government since the 30s, and became so large and horrible and destructive long about the 70s and 80s that it made obviously possible people like Ronald Reagan, and paved the way for the Republican Revolution in the 90s. It was, you know, even now that it's sort of viewed at through the lens of history as opposed to current social policy, you know, even a lot of sort of classical old liberal thinkers talk about it in terms of how devastating it really was to people, that you could basically get into a welfare rut in this country and become a ward of the state or of the federal government and be there forever. As much of a pain in the neck as that was for taxpayers, as much of a burden as it was to the free market system and sort of freeing up tax dollars and capital to be spent on other things, what was most devastating of all was to the recipients of it, who got sort of trapped in this terrible vortex and weren't able to sort of pull themselves out of it until the concept of welfare to work came along and states were forced, at the urging and insistence of a saner Washington, that people get out and free themselves from welfare. And I think a lot of people agree it has been a magnificent success in so many ways. But, of course, if you've been sitting around Washington for 15 years just waiting to get your majority back and waiting to get control back, you're going to probably throw back to some of the pretty old-style classical liberalism that got them into trouble in the first place.
Well, how could they be getting away with this? Even Clinton was against welfare.
You know, Michael, I think that the truth of the matter is a lot of people don't realize it. They haven't the faintest clue that this is going on, and why should they? So many people in our business and, you know, in my business are sort of failing to report a lot of this stuff. The focus is on, you know, the great need to have this spending package. I was laughing hysterically the other day. The New York Times had a lead that noted that the House stimulus package had passed without a single Republican vote, and then in the very next sentence of their story, there they are talking about how the stimulus package was a signal that there was broad belief that this was a very important thing, and it's just comical. It's like in the one hand you're saying that, you know, all Republicans and 11 Democrats voted against it, and then in the next sentence you're saying everybody seems to agree. That it just makes no sense. But I think that you know, our business is completely filled with that kind of reporting that ignores truly important details like this development with trying to turn back welfare reform. The second thing is obviously, and you talk about this, Obama, the extraordinary delight that people have with President Obama and the complete unwillingness to cover him with any sort of vigor and skepticism. It's just, I wish I could remind some of my sort of more traditional reporters and my colleagues that it was this kind of unthinking, unquestioning reporting that failed to discover that there was weren't weapons of mass destruction until we were well into Iraq. But they, of course, don't want to hear anything like that.
This stimulus doesn't seem like much of a stimulus.
Yeah, in addition to all of the, you know, the sort of social engineering and the all the liberal goodies that Democrats are sort of piling onto this, I'm amazed at how little actual bricks and mortar infrastructure is included in this bill. you know, a lot of conservatives, while they may not like the idea of the federal government grabbing up a whole bunch of tax dollars as well as saddling enormous amounts of debt on future generations in order to build roads and bridges and things like that, while a lot of conservatives don't like that idea, they'll sort of begrudgingly go along with it because you actually have something to show for it at the end. You know, you have a rebuilt bridge, you have a rebuilt road, and Democrats came out, and Barack Obama came out, basically that was the central focus of this thing when he first started talking about it. In the House bill, it is less than 10% of the House bill goes to the so-called bricks and mortar, or you know, to construction projects and to road building. It's just staggering. And so you ask the question in 10 years, you know, what will we have to show for it? I don't know. If only 10% of it is going to pavement and concrete, then I doubt a whole lot of that other stuff will be able to point to it in 10 years from now. You know, one of the things that has just been so astonishing, and we see it every day from Robert Gibbs in the White House press briefings, is, you know, he's answering all these questions about lobbying inside of the Obama administration and, you know, putting people in charge of the Treasury Department who don't pay their taxes, or Tom Daschle, who didn't pay his taxes. We're going to make him HHS secretary. You know, this is a guy, Barack Obama, ran a brilliant campaign and won an historic election on the promise to change the way things run in Washington. And this is not change. You know, this is absolutely not change. This is a return to the big government, and it's a return to classic old union-centered federal bureaucracy that has been quite soundly rejected in recent years, and I suppose in time it will be rejected again, but it looks like we're going to have to, things are going to have to get pretty bad before we remember how bad it was.
Charles Hurt, great article. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.